Now, it's time for the Cybersecurity News Bite with Jim Guckin.
Cybersecurity News Bite, episode number 47 for February 27th, 2023. Ransomware ransom at the right price. Fake Amazon Prime email abuses LinkedIn URL shortener. Wiper malware goes global. And ChatGPT. One of the biggest concerns you'll have as a security person or someone who owns a business is, well, what happens when ransomware, well, I shouldn't say he's owned a business. I mean, you're going to be security minded here. What's the ransom going to look like when you eventually get hit? And, you know, we've seen things in millions of dollars and sometimes they can be paid, sometimes they can't. So what is a hacker to do to kind of solve this dilemma? Well, one hacker group is definitely trying. Hardbit, who was first seen in October 2022, who is currently on version 2.0 of their ransomware software, which came out in November of 2022. This is the current version, according to Varonis. They're going to try to tackle it. So let's first talk about their malware. It modifies the registry to disable Windows Defender. So if you're using Windows Defender as your primary thing, this goes in and changes that monitoring. It tries to stop 86 processes, hopefully, you know, usually antivirus or something along those lines. It adds itself into the startup folder so that, you know, every time you restart your computer or you restart your server, it'll come back on. And like most modern malware at this point, or ransomware, it deletes shadow copies so you can't really go back to a previous version and get all your data back. I mean, that's kind of your everyday ransomware at this point. Now, the version 2.0, the interesting thing is, instead of writing the encrypted data to a file copy and deleting the original, which is what some malware does. So, you know, let's just say I have a file.txt file, just a text file on my desktop. What most ransomware will do is it'll take it, encrypt it, put a copy down, delete the original. This one actually opens the files, takes the content, and encrypts it. And now, from what experts say, this makes it a lot harder to recover, and it's a lot faster. And unlike most normal ransomware groups, there's no data leak site that that Hardbit uses to kind of threaten you. I mean, they say that they have a site, but there's not like a... Some of the other ones have like a really... You can go to it and see what the current time frames are and what data they say they have. They threaten to leak it. If you know, information, or if their ransom wasn't paid. Most of this is just that normal extortion kind of thing. Now, as I said, Hardbit is trying to fill that gap into, well, how much is a ransom is a good amount of ransom? And it's hard for a hacker. I mean, they can overshoot, and then your insurance may not cover it, and you're not going to cover the thing, and then it's there. Or, typical business, you aim too low, you get what you want, but you could have gotten more out of the deal. So, when Hardbit goes to negotiate, or once they, you know, hit your system, there's no initial amount set. You know, most modern ransomware will say, hey, you send this many bitcoins, we'll give you the unlock key. This one, nothing set by default, but they give you 48 hours to make contact with them via a peer-to-peer encrypted network. So after 48 hours, there's no open recovering your stuff, but they give you 48 hours. One, the time frame doesn't give you a lot of time to do a lot of thinking, which is part of their plan here. But one of the things they try to do is they try to convince the person whose network is, you know, encrypted at this point. Don't work with intermediaries because that's going to just drive the price up. And they want you to disclose all your cyber insurance details. And they will adjust their ransom to whatever your insurance copies. Now, if you've ever had to do with cybersecurity insurance, you're contractually obligated not to disclose your insurance coverage to the attackers. But they're hoping that they can kind of, you know, get you to budge a little on that. Because, oh, look, it's not us that's keeping you from getting your data back. You're just your insurance. You don't have to. You're already paying for it. Might as well use it. This is their kind of, you know, thought process on this. So the hope is you walk into the office, your stuff is encrypted. You reach out to them, say, look, don't work with anyone else. Work with us. Just tell us how much your insurance covers and we'll deal with the rest. We'll just say, hey, whatever your insurance maximum is, we will hit that. And, you know, no extra cost to you. And I have to say, it's kind of genius. I mean, granted, you'd have to put yourself in a position where you're giving them the information. And then if you ever are found out by your insurance company, you will be, you know, legally liable. But then really you're just inviting them to do it again. They know. We talked about this, was it last week, a couple weeks ago, that, you know, most places that have a cybersecurity breach end up having another one. So they're just going to go after the insurance again. And now it's just impacting your ability to do your job. But I have to give them credit because I think it's very funny because, you know, they kind of found that, or they're trying to find that weird niche where how much they can charge versus how much the insurance covers. This is perfect because it's like, look, from a business standpoint, it's not coming out of your pocket. It's coming out of your insurances. Just give it to us and we'll leave it alone. Of course, you always run into the same thing. If you really can't trust what is on your network, what access they have, and, you know, they could come back. So, I mean, it's clever. I wouldn't go for it, but it's clever. And the time frame doesn't give you a lot of time to check with, you know, the insurance company for any kind of sting or work with law enforcement to track them down because you have 48 hours. It's encrypted, so it's not easy for them to track and figure out, you know, the best way of catching them. But, as I said, I like to report on interesting tactics, and this is a new one. And honestly, I'm surprised more aren't doing it at this point, and I'm sure, depending on how successful they are, I think you may see more of this coming down the line. Now, when I talk about your traditional phishing emails, I always say, you know, it's getting harder to push people in the right direction, saying, hey, you need to look out for X. Like, you know, look for a domain that doesn't look familiar. Because now they're starting to use legitimate link locations to hide or fish you or malware, whatever it is. And this next story is part of that. So there is a new Amazon Prime-based email that's out there. And the URL in the email, if you look at it, is actually a LinkedIn email, or a LinkedIn URL shortener. So it's, you take a big long address and you give it like that small code that you can use. Well, this is what they're doing. The email, you know, claims to be sent from Amazon Prime. It has the subject, new membership statement. Renewal Prime membership statement was ended. Your renewal scheduled on February so-and-so 2023. And it has an update now button. The update now button has a link.in/ and then some character. That's the LinkedIn shortener code. And the reason I want to watch out for this is because, once again, it might be something that most people who check might go, well, it's a LinkedIn link, so it can't be there. But yes, it can be. So the idea behind this phishing is once you have, you know, opened the email and clicked the link, it asks for your email or phone number tied to your Amazon account, which is normal for a login. Now, the interesting thing here is they take it one step further. Depending on what kind of email you put in there, for example, if you put a Gmail in there, it directs you to a Gmail password page or Gmail looking password page, I should say. Same as you enter Microsoft, it'll take you to a site that looks like Microsoft's login site. Once again, these are all fictitious. They are all controlled by the phisher, but it's pretty interesting that they went through to design those different websites to kind of fool you into it. Now, once you've entered your password into this, hopefully you've stopped way before this, but if you enter your password, it immediately takes you up to a security checkup. Once again, controlled by the phisher. which wants you to verify your information for Amazon to make sure it's you. They ask for your mother's name, phone number, date of birth, address, city, state, province, region, zip or postal code, cardholder name, your credit card number, your security code, your expiration date. All of this, obviously, to get you into that normal, you know, renew your Prime stuff. But in all honesty, all this is really what they need to help steal your identity. I'm surprised they even asked for your social security number. I mean, who knows? Maybe they do now. But it's something to watch out for. So if you see, you know, anything coming up about your Amazon Prime, most systems will flag it or put it as spam. Sometimes it gets through. You know how it works. They you know, merge one system on another. But be aware of what you're clicking. Make sure that it's not a shortened email or shortened URL coming in. You're better off if you see stuff like this and you think it may be true, log into the website directly. Don't click on any link on there. Don't click unsubscribe. None of that. Just go to the site. So go to Amazon.com. I'm sure if your Prime has lapsed for whatever reason, bad credit card, whatever, they're going to tell you right on that front page and you'll be able to go in and update it. In fact, it's something I do even when, you know, I get an email that is legitimate for all, you know, intent and purposes. But I will still go to the website directly and make my changes or look at stuff there. Just so that I kind of, you know, in a moment of quickness, don't try to go to, like, you know, something that's a type squatted URL. You know, real quick by looking at it would look the same, but it's not really. The famous one people kind of use is Amazon, but instead of the O, it's a zero. I don't want to fall for that stuff. So I try to always go to the website itself to be able to put the information in and do it that way. So something you should definitely think about, but just be aware, this is the new phishing email that's going around. For our third story, it's something I want to talk about that we've talked about previously. In fact, about a year ago when the Russian-Ukrainian war started. If you remember in those early days, we talked about how Ukrainian systems were attacked by a ransomware that really its goal was just to wipe the data. Whether it just went in as malware and wiped the data, or whether it was ransomware that encrypted the data and then didn't really create a key for it. And there was no one to contact about it. It was just, hey, your data is encrypted. Have fun. Well, FortiGuard Labs in early 2022 were the ones who kind of first started talking about this wiper malware. And as we said, it's kind of in parallel with the Russian-Ukraine war. Now, kind of as I predicted back then, we were going to see a rise in this, and it was going to be, well, nasty. So in the second half of 2022, there was a 53% increase in its use. And, you know, we talked about this, you know, probably initially being created by a nation state. There's no definite on that. It just seemed like something that kind of made sense at the time. Just due to the fact that it was mostly being used against the Ukrainians during the war. And I said, like, eventually this code is going to get out. It's going to be something you have to fear, because it's really a code of just evil. Well, we've come to that point. Is that it continues to be increasing use, and hackers now have started to use this code against people in retribution. And it's something you have to watch out for, because it's the destruction of the data. So you want to hope that you have a backed up version, that it hasn't done anything to your backups. And when we get into the backup discussion, the number one thing is, if you're not testing it regularly, you do not have a backup. I'll repeat that again. If you're not testing it on a given regular cadence, then you do not have it. And I'm not just saying you restore from backup. You make sure everything's there. You make sure if you bring a system back up, it runs. Because that's how you'll know that it really works. You should always be testing your disaster recovery or business continuity plans, because that's the important thing to do. And this is why, because if your data gets deleted by this, you know, wiper malware, you want to be able to recover it and have as minimum downtime as possible. And I know, look, you can't back up every minute. That's just not feasible. But whatever you're comfortable with as an organization, that's something you have to do. Because it's here now. Hackers are using it. Granted, ransomware is still going to be the main thing because they want to try to get money out of you. But maybe if you don't play ball, this could be something that they start using in their toolkits. We've seen how they've kind of escalated from just extortion to extortion with DDoS, attacks against your network. This may just be another, you know, tool in their tool belt, so to say. But this one is kind of easy because you want to make sure that you have the ability to recover your data and you're able to use it. And it's not something on the network that the software they're using will be able to see or connect to. It should be totally separate, but still easily accessible. So it's something you should be thinking about because, like I said, it's getting more and more popular and is being used outside of the Ukrainian war. So it's something that should at least be, if not, I wouldn't say the forefront of your knowledge, but somewhere in the back of your head, you keep it, you know, handy because it's starting to be used against companies and you could easily be its next target. Now, for the final story, is probably something I should have talked about a while ago. I didn't know how to go at it, which is ChatGPT. It's a tool. I love it. I play with it all the time. I use the other stuff, you know, the image generator and stuff like that. Real fun to play with. And if you don't know, ChatGPT just creates AI-driven text that's supposed to sound human. And, you know, I've seen a lot of news stories initially that was like, hey, you can program malware and viruses with this. And to tell you the truth, when me and a couple friends tried it, it generated code. But you still had to have an underlying knowledge of that code to be able to make it work. Like it would call functions that didn't exist. And I'm sure they put some safeguards in against it. I know they've been kind of tweaking the back end of it. But I don't think it's the best at this point for code writing. Because it gets the concepts. Doesn't necessarily think it all the way through. The code we got, we eventually got working, but it was, you had to understand what it was trying to do. You had to be able to read the code and put the functions in that was supposed to and kind of recorrect and point ChatGPT to give you what you needed. And the code, by far, like any other AI or computer-driven code, is not the most, you know, how do I put this? It's not the most eloquent. It's more of, it'll get the job done, but it's not the best. And I'm sure just like they're able to do ChatGPT-based detection of text, I'm sure they'll figure the same way of doing that out against anything program-related written out of it. Now, where I kind of am starting to get worried with ChatGPT is in phishing attempts. And the first place I've seen it, you know, as part of a phishing attempt is not what you would think. It's not like it was emailing other people. People were creating fake, quote-unquote, official ChatGPT websites with malicious links that kind of installed either Luma, Stealer, Aurora Stealer, and or Clipper malware. And this fake ChatGPT site looks like the real one. It says, hey, try us out. That's where you get the install. You download the software. You're done. But it's not just that. There was actually an unofficial ChatGPT social media page that was put up by malicious actors. And the thing about their site at the time that I saw it was that it has regular content, videos, unrelated posts, all of this to kind of lay the groundwork of building a credibility that this is the social media website that you should be following. And some of it even has links. The links are just type squatted links for domains out there. So, you know, ChatGPT, but the, I don't know, T is a 3 or whatever. I forget exactly what it looked like. But they're close enough that you would fall for it. And all of that is kind of masquerading and pretending to be the actual official ChatGPT website. So I have seen demonstrations where they've used it for phishing in chatting or in generation of a phishing email to make it seem more legitimate, especially if English is not your first language or German's not your first language and you're targeting a German company. It can come pretty close to coming up with a human sounding conversation string, which, you know, we always say look for bad English or something along those lines for phishing. You know, ChatGPT is there, but you can't do it automated. I think the social media angle, though, was the first time I've seen them try to hop on a trend, build all this, you know, social media clout by making posts and responding to people and tagging other people. Like, it really went out of its way to make it look legitimate. All to get you to go to the website and download the malware. So why ChatGPT is something, you know, you should keep on your radar. As I said, right now, as programming is concerned, the test I did, we could get it working, but you had to work at it. It wasn't something like, you know, a 5-year-old can go and just type the, give me a virus and it will do that. We need to kind of say, well, you got to call this and it's trying to call this function. Let's build this function, stuff along those lines. As far as chatting and email creation, yeah, that's a very effective tool. It's something you have to watch out for. But as I said, the new thing is the social media, where if you're going to follow someone on social media, especially in the days of like Twitter, where you can buy a blue check mark, they really mean nothing now. So spend time to really research and make sure it is the legitimate site, not just something claiming to be an official site with a blue check mark, to make sure that you are protected against, you know, fake sites like this that just have a type squatted URL that looks exactly like the one it wants you to go. All right, everyone, thanks for joining us. Hope you enjoyed something. Don't forget, you can find the show notes with all this information and the articles we got this from at cybersecuritynewsbyte.com. You can find out more about me at my website, jimguckin.com. And make sure you stay safe online, and we'll talk again next week.
You've been listening to the Cybersecurity News Bite with Jim Guckin. Learn more about our show at cybersecuritynewsbyte.com.